Welcome back, everybody, to the DistressedPro.com professional podcast series. Today, I've been hearing from a lot of folks who are subscribers or who plan to be subscribers who are interested in note buying. So today, I have Doug Grimm on the phone. He's been investing in real estate for 9 years. He's participated in the sale and purchase of over $60 million in non-performing debt. He and his partner, Chris Glez, together, they co-manage Northern Value Group, a boutique distressed debt fund, and they are also the co-founders of Note Buying Mastery, which is a note buying training company. And with that, Doug, welcome to the call.
Thanks, Brecht. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks. So let's dive right into it. I know that 99% of our listeners, they already know what it means to buy a note, but real briefly, if you would, because we are on iTunes and everywhere else, we don't know who's listening. If you just tell us what it means to buy a note and what some of the advantages are, maybe over some other investments.
Well, sure. So one thing I like to remember when you're buying a note, it really boils down to buying a paper asset, and it's really easy to contrast it up against other kinds of real estate investing, because if you buy in traditional real estate, you go out and you find a property you want to buy, and when you sit at the closing table, you get what's called a deed, right? The deed transfers the title over to you, and then you own that property. Well, the big difference here is that when you buy a note, you're buying a piece of paper that says you have a right and a lien on that property. Mm-hmm. So specifically, what we end up buying in our business is a promissory note and a mortgage, or in some states called a trust deed. So just to give a little more clarity on that promissory note, if you think about a promissory note as nothing more than a receivable, you're really buying two things. You're buying a future stream of payments, potentially, right, in the form of a promissory note.
Sure.
And then you're also buying a lien against a piece of property secured by that property. So that really is, in essence, that's what you're buying. Now, there's a few other documents that go along with it, but that's the meat of it. And then as you contrast that against other real estate, some of the advantages are actually pretty fun, because if I'm going out there to buy, say, bank-owned property or other ways to find traditional real estate deals, there's quite a number of people chasing after the same kind of deals. So you end up running into some competition, especially if you're buying bank-owned property. Because by the time a bank lists it on the MLS, there's, 20 other people in your market potentially looking at that same deal or more.
Right.
So the first benefit I see is there's less competition in buying notes, because mm-hmm. fewer people know how to reach the right people at the banks who make the decision to sell this kind of stuff. And then another thing that comes to mind is if I buy a traditional piece of real estate traditionally, I can basically do one of two things with it. I can fix it up and sell it, or I can fix it up and rent it. Now, in buying a note and a mortgage, you've got a ton of different exit strategies available to you. Which we can go into in a few minutes here, but there's a lot of different directions that you can go in order to convert that asset to cash in your business.
Yeah.
So we really like that part of the business. And then the third thing that I would say is a little bit more subjective, but very important to Chris and I in our business, and that is, if you go buy a property, say it's from a distressed seller of some kind, maybe it's a probate situation, or maybe a business owner that's got a piece of property they need to sell. You can get into a situation where you kind of feel like you're beating up the owner on price, and it's not always a feel good transaction necessarily. But in a note buying situation, you're dealing with a bank,
right,
or a fund of some kind who basically looks like it looks at the situation sort of with a linear equation. So the first of all, the emotional component is removed, and second of all, the longer term benefit is a little bit of a bigger concept. And by that I mean there's all of this stagnation happening in the banking and financial markets right now, and by stagnation I mean lots and lots of non-performing loans that the banks don't want.
Sure.
But the only way that that problem is going to be solved, in my opinion and in our opinion, is when more and more investor capital, private investor capital, enters the space to help unclog the system by buying this kind of paper. Hmm. So us, you know, with us stepping in to buy these notes and mortgages, we actually feel like we're contributing to the solution or the healing of the housing market, because all the government programs in the world can't fix the stagnation, and all the banks sort of have their hands tied right now. So we feel like that third benefit is really doing good to the housing industry, but more specifically to specific borrowers. Because many times we buy a loan, and we'll get into this in a minute, but we can buy a loan and work out new payment terms with that borrower and modify their loan and actually keep them in their house.
Hmm.
You know, give them another chance to stand up on their feet and be current on their payments and that sort of thing. So that's why I call it sort of the subjective benefit. But you don't get to do that kind of thing, buying traditional real estate.
Right. So, you know, I know in my business there's I have a number of contacts, some of which are buy notes, and I've seen a couple of different plans. You know, some involve workouts, usually commercial type workouts, and sometimes it's more like a loan to own sort of a thing. What's your business plan with notes when you're out there?
Yeah, well, first of all, we typically, at least in the last 18 months to 2 years, we've been focusing on residential pools of loans. But that's not to say that we don't come across commercial. And actually, I've been involved with helping some other investors that I know purchase some commercial loans or portfolios. But in our business, we will typically buy those loans knowing that they're already very past due, right? Many of them haven't made payments in a year. So our strategy is to, first of all, determine what the ability and intent of that borrower is. Because without those two pieces of information, the only thing we can do is foreclose.
Right.
And we don't necessarily want to foreclose on every loan. We'd like to have the borrower cooperate. And if the borrower will cooperate, we've got a few different creative strategies that we can employ. Then we can work with them to do a short sale on their property. So they list the property with a realtor and get it sold, which is one of our favorite exits, because it takes virtually none of our time or money to accomplish that exit strategy, because they're hiring the agent. Mm-hmm. The agent is out there marketing the property. So it's a fantastic way for us to get cashed out of our loan.
Mm-hmm. All you have to do really is buy it right.
That's right. All we have to do is buy it right and then, well, provide them a payoff letter when the time comes.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but then the other another way to handle it is if we can get the borrower to cooperate, we'll attempt to underwrite them to make sure that they can fit into some kind of modification or restructuring idea. And if they can, we're going to work with them to try to move them in the direction of a refinance. Now, the way that we handle that is through the FHA's new, what they're calling a negative equity refinance program.
Okay.
And in a nutshell, in an ideal situation, we could buy a loan on January 1st, get the borrower into a loan modification 2 months later. They make 4 on-time payments in that new loan mod under our new terms.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, they can qualify for the FHA's loan mod program if they meet the other or excuse me, the refinance program if they meet some of the other guidelines. So what that means is we buy a loan at X dollars. They give us some payment income on their loan mod, and then they refinance and cash us out within a year. So that's a really exciting program, and you know, there are only a few lenders in the U.S. that are signed up to participate in that refinance program. It's a special program through FHA.
Then.
It is. It was introduced in August of 2010, and virtually no lender was participating in it at first, and for one simple reason. The program requires the existing lender to write down the mortgage at least 10% and to 97% of today's appraised value.
Hmm.
So you can imagine if Bank of America, for example, started to refinance, allow their borrowers to refinance under that program, imagine the coup that would occur if one borrower, 10 borrowers did it, they'd have a run on the bank, essentially, having all their borrowers want to do that refinance. So it's just something that most lenders can't afford to do. But if we, having bought that loan at a much lower basis than the lender, we are happy to write that loan down to 97% of today's value because we've bought it at a significant discount to that.
Right.
So.
Wow. So where are you finding your deals? I mean, where are you buying notes? Presumably banks. Yeah, I think you touched on that. But tell us a little bit about sort of who you're targeting and how that works.
Yeah, well, we take a sort of a multi-pronged approach to targeting. And the reason is that every type of institution is motivated by different factors. And so I like to think of the landscape out there as being dominated by, you know, the big 10 banks, right?
Sure.
And the rest of the FDIC bank crew. But then there's also a couple of other institutions that are worth looking into. First of all, opportunity funds and hedge funds, private equity funds have been very active in the last 2 years. In fact, starting in late 2007, there were some pretty high-profile ex-mortgage executives who started large hedge funds to do this sort of thing. So what you've got happening in the marketplace right now is you've got these hedge funds with more money than they know what to do with, that they started to buy these kinds of loans from larger bank institutions in 08 and 09. And so since the largest banks in the country really only want to sell in huge chunks of mortgages,
yep,
that most of us can't participate in because we don't have the capital, right?
Right.
But there is an opportunity to follow up with those people who are buying in large chunks. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, you've got opportunity funds on the East Coast, West Coast, and Chicago that have bought in huge chunks that are now looking to divest some of what they've acquired. They've had it on their books for 12 or 18 months. They've worked it through. Now they realize what they've bought,
right,
and they know that they don't have market expertise in every market. So there's an opportunity for people, for local investors who don't want to buy, you know, a million, 5 million, or 20 million at a time. They want to buy two or three deals at a time,
right,
to contact these funds. And that's where we've had some success, is getting in touch with you know, some of the funds that are out there that do want to sell small pieces or chunks of their portfolio. So that's one. But you mentioned banks, and I'll tell you where we've had the best connection is with some regional banks.
Sure.
And, you know, it's for a couple different reasons. Number one, they're a little bit more accessible in some ways. You know, they're not so large that the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. Necessarily, but also because regional banks are under a particularly large amount of pressure from the FDIC and the OTS,
mm-hmm,
to you know, get their balance sheets in order and stop the bleeding that's happening.
Right.
And so the regional banks and the community banks are the ones that are getting the pressure, but they can't necessarily just go into the capital markets and recapitalize as quickly as the larger banks. So in some cases, the regionals have no other choice but to sell some loans.
Right.
And you know, they're motivated in different ways than a fund would be motivated. They're motivated by their shareholders and, you know, their stock price and quarter-to-quarter balance sheets, whereas a fund is going to be motivated, since they've bought the assets at a discount, they're motivated to make money on their capital, make a return. So, you know, the motivating factors are different, but we've bought from both of those types of sources.
Right. You know, and that's something that I promote at the distresspro.com blog, as well as pursuing your regional and your community banks. You know, in the transaction world, on that side of things, I'm an auctioneer and I do REO and foreclosure auctions, and those are our best clients. I mean, there's, you know, breaking into Bank of America or Wells Fargo or something like that is a far cry from, you know, the Salem Five. And, you know, it's a different animal. So I'm right there with you on that. So once you've identified sort of your target institutions, and I know there's probably a lot more to it in terms of identifying, like, who really has what they have. And a lot of that I do cover on the blog. But tell me, after you've identified a target institution, a little bit about the next steps, who you're looking for.
Yeah, well, just a word on how we kind of target one. Just a brief word on that. We typically will look for the banks, yes, that actually have these kinds of loans on their books.
Right.
And I know your data does a fantastic. You do a great job of laying out the data in a way that you can actually see what kind of bad loans, if any, the bank has on their books. So we would target them that way. But a secondary filter is, you know, in order to sell loans, you know, we have to think about from the bank's perspective, what does that do? What does that cause them to do when they sell loans? And it's important to remember that when they sell bad loans, they have to actually realize a loss on their books. And
yep.
So in order to realize a loss, they actually have to have cash set aside available to offset that loss.
Right.
So for a bank that, for example, is not well capitalized, in other words, they have very little excess cash laying around, it's very difficult and sometimes impossible for them to actually realize a loss, because if they did, they would become insolvent.
Yeah.
So that's our secondary filter, is do they actually have adequate capital? Are they, quote unquote, relatively healthy as a bank? Because if they aren't, they may have all the bad loans in the world, but they can't sell them to you if selling would cause them to get that knock on their door on Friday afternoon from the FDIC that none of them wants to get. So,
right.
So yes, we'll narrow it down in that way. But even beyond that, it still goes from institution to institution. It's every bank is motivated by their own factors. So it's not a hard and fast rule. It's just one way that we approach it. And then once we've identified which institution we're going to go after, you know, I think of it as a top-down concept as opposed to a bottom-up. And by that, I mean, in years past, my strategy was to sort of just call in and see who I could ask for and figure out, you know, if they're the right person. And I didn't really have a method to my madness years ago. And, you know, much to my hindsight is 2020, but I had to go through all that to realize how these banks and institutions make the decisions that they make. And as you can imagine, a lot of these decisions are made strategically from a pretty high level.
Oh, definitely.
So so now I'm targeting VP level personnel or above.
Right.
And I mean, it kind of goes without saying, but you know, there's a lot of if you just go out to Google and you type note sales at banks, you'll hear a lot of chatter about loss mitigation. or loan workouts or loan resolution groups. Well, those types of groups in the banks, their whole operation is set up to have loans on the books and work out the loans that are there. So by calling that kind of department or that department and asking them to sell loans, it's kind of counterintuitive, because you're almost like saying, sell me some of the loans that justify your department, you know?
Sure.
So for that reason, I look for other types of departments, like capital markets groups, fixed income type groups, or portfolio directors. And I really have to think about the institution that I'm targeting. You know, are they a bank? Are they a credit union by chance? Are they, you know, how big is the bank? Like, the larger the institution, the more chance they will actually have a quote unquote capital markets group. You know, your average community bank down the street is, I guarantee you, not going to have a capital markets group. It's just not part of their operation. But by the same token, you may have some success with them if you know how to approach them. And I like to approach, if it's a smaller institution, I like to go to the board of directors and try to find somebody who's been on the board a long time, who understands banking. And the reason why I do that is not because they will make the decision directly, because many times they don't, you know, I've even called the board of a larger regional, and I'm not calling them because I think they can make the decision for me. I'm calling them to help me get an introduction into the bank.
Right.
Because remember, a board of directors is going to be made up of a bunch of other people, either in the industry or they've got their own businesses or whatever, but they're not going to be at the bank necessarily.
Right.
So if you can strike up a good conversation with somebody on the board and say, look, I was hoping to get your help. Can you tell me who I might talk to over at the bank? I see you've been on the board for 9 or 10 years, and gosh, it looks like you were on the credit committee as well. I wonder if you would help me. Who do I talk to about, you know, buying some notes and mortgages? Sometimes that kind of a conversation, it lower, you know, they don't immediately put up their guard, because you're not asking them to make the decision to sell. You're asking for their help.
Right. You know, I like that. In my email mini course, I go over a lot of sort of things related to this. And one of the things that I cover is a tactic where I'll call after hours to a bank and dial the president by name, because inevitably they have a directory and he's really the only guy or girl there working after hours, and it's worked out great for me. But I like what you're saying about the board, because it is even a little bit more removed, and it's even, I mean, you really don't, there's nothing higher.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right.
Else to go, you know, up.
Yeah, what you want to happen is to make that call to a director. And this is ideal. I mean, it's not going to happen in every case. In fact, the odds are not in your favor, I'll be honest. But when it does work...
You only need a few, Doug.
That's right. You don't need 100 sellers. You need one with 100 notes, right? So
right.
When it does go ideally, what can happen is you have a great conversation with that director. 2 or 3 days later, someone in the bank someone way above me told me to call you.
Right.
You know, and that's a great position to be in.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's awesome. So I think we covered a lot of what I wanted to cover today. And I know you're super busy and trying to enjoy your summer at the same time here. So I really appreciate you getting on and this call. And with that, I think I'm going to let you go, but, you know, maybe we could have you back. If that'll be all right, and we could cover something, you know, maybe a little beyond our note buying primer.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to talk with you again.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
It was my pleasure. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye.